One of the things I wanted to actually ask you about, because this is something that just fascinates me. What is up with the humongous gas stations you have in Texas? Like,
Those are regular size gas stations. What's
that's
wrong with
regular
your gas
size
station?
gas station. Steadfast HTX is in the house. Welcome to the Question and the Answers podcast. How are you guys doing?
Doing great.
Great.
Good.
Well.
Awesome. We've got Andrew, Charlie, Jason, and Travis from the band. And yeah, I'm really excited to have you guys on the show. I love your guys' new record, or it's your debut record, actually, Transmitters. I appreciate getting an advanced copy of it. Yeah. Jason's pointing to it right there. Yeah, and I wanted to bring you on the show so we could talk about it. I know it's been kind of an interesting year for you guys because the album actually got released kind of just right around when the pandemic was starting to hit. And so you didn't really have an opportunity to really, push the record. So now we're kind of getting to that point now that we're kind of coming towards the end of the somewhat to the end of the pandemic. So nonetheless, welcome to the show. Yeah, I mean, so you guys are from the Houston, Texas area, hence the HTX. And I know that you guys are a little bit more spread out now. Jason, you recently moved out of Texas, right?
I am. I'm working in the Pacific Northwest right now. So, fun stuff.
Got it. But otherwise, before then, you had been living mostly in the Houston area your whole life, right?
Yeah. So born and raised in Houston. I did spend about a decade in Austin, Texas, from 99 to 08. So just under a decade. And then went back to Houston. So started in Houston and finished in Houston, basically.
Got it. And I know Charlie lives like kind of just outside of Houston in Spring, right? Like that's where you live.
Yeah, north of Houston.
Yeah,
it all counts. It's greater Houston. They just mush all of our shit together. It doesn't.
Yeah, I think a lot of major cities anymore are like that, kind of like that LA standard where it's like, you have LA proper and then you have like a million
right.
little cities around it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, that's rad. I mean, Texas is a crazy big state. And like, I want to touch in on like what it's like to be a band from Texas a little bit later into the show. But, I've had a couple of really great experiences performing in Texas out there. And Charlie and I have a cool relationship because he's actually, the kind of tour manager and main roadie for Tsunami Bomb. So he and I have some cool stories to talk about. But yeah, man, I really love the record and I want to just kind of jump out of the gate. Like, so tell me about how this record came together, how you guys came together as a band. And yeah, just give me some brief history of what Steadfast HTX is all about.
Well, I'll start and then I'll let Andrew jump in. So Travis and I were kind of like in this alternative folk with a punk influence, like singer-songwriter style band called, strangely enough, Jason Bancroft and the Wealthy Beggars. And Charlie, we met Charlie through that. He helped us record some stuff and played a couple shows with us, but just became like a really good drinking buddy. Andrew and Travis and I, Andrew was in another band and we shared a practice space downtown in Houston. And we became friends with those guys. So really rad guys. And then, when was it, Travis? Was it 2015 or 2016? Anyways, I hit a mark where I was just like, all right, I think that we're taking this as far as it's going to go. And so I just said, call it a day. And so I hung up the guitar on the rack for about a year. And that's when Andrew was hitting me up online and saying, hey, let's do something. So I'll let Andrew go through what he was thinking at that time.
Oh, yeah. So I met Jason when we shared that space and he handed me one of his CDs, as you would. And it was fantastic. And I loved it. And I caught, kind of a bug for like wanting to work with Jason. And I just heard through the grapevine that he was stepping back from this other band he was in. So I just started hassling him. I just flat out bum rushed him. I sent him a message and I go, hey man, you need to form a new band and I'll play bass for you, if you need one. And then he's like, I'm taking some time. I got some things going on in my life. I appreciate the offer. I'll get back with you on that. And so like a month goes by and I go, hey man, how you doing? How about that thing we talked about? And I kept that up, like, not every month, but like, you know, maybe every other month
for a good 12 months.
And then finally he kind of just capitulated and he's like, I'm not, this guy is not going to get out of my hair. I think that's, I'm guessing this is my, this is what I think his internal dialogue was. I'm just projecting all of this. This is what I think it was. And then he sent me an email and he's like, sent you some songs, man. And I'm like, because you want me to learn them? Because you are forming a band and I'm your bass player? He's like, I didn't think I needed to say that, man. He was very cool about it and I was very fanboy about it, but it worked out.
Funny.
Yeah, so. I actually kind of had the same, I've known Jason and like, I knew his other bands and I knew he had, Steadfast was a project years before that Jason had with some friends in Austin, kind of a super group of some of the Austin punk rock scene. And when I get a text from him one morning, he's like, hey, I'm thinking about maybe getting Steadfast back together here in Houston. And my response immediately was, please ask me to play drums in Steadfast. Please ask me to play drums in Steadfast. Please ask me to play drums in Steadfast. He goes, I wouldn't have sent you, his response was, I wouldn't have sent you that text if I wasn't asking you to play drums in Steadfast. I was like, all right, cool. Let's do this. And then Travis just came. Travis is just an actor.
Yeah, I was already there, which I was glad we started the band because right before the last band ended, I was all excited. I just bought a brand new guitar. I think we played one show with it. And Jason goes, hey, man, I know we'd always straight with each other, but think I'm done for a while. I want to do some traveling with the wife. I was like, all right. That was always the thing. Family first, super cool. But I was always like, just fucking bought a guitar, dude. What are we doing here? So I was glad to get to use it. It was nice.
That's funny.
That's killer. Yeah. I mean, it's always interesting to hear about how different band, how like a band comes together, you know, because the stories are usually like kind of uniquely different, even though like a lot of them kind of ride a lot similar themes, but no, that's cool. And so Jason, you know, you touched on a former project of yours and I'm familiar with some of Charlie's former work. So like, you know, he and I go pretty far back, actually. You know, I've known Charlie now for like upwards of like 20 years. We have some stories, but I'll save those for another time. But you know, I know Charlie, you were in this band called Next to Nothing for a long time, who, you know, for many years actually were a pretty prominent band in that area. And I know that for a hot minute there, like you were actually kind of flirting with like some pretty big labels for a minute, right?
We had a quick flirting with them, and then we broke up.
Right.
The way it always happens.
Right. But I'd be interested to know, so like Andrew and Travis, like what other projects have you been involved with prior to your time in Steadfast?
Most of the stuff I did was it's always been local stuff. I certainly never achieved the status of the people that Jason and Charlie have played with before. It's just I always just enjoyed playing music, and I was never took it too seriously because I'm a moron and I'm too goofy to take that kind of stuff serious. So it was, for me, it was always fun. I was hanging out, getting to play music with my buddies, and that's all it was. And like when Jason first met me, or when he first reached out to me, I was opening up for Chuck Reagan, just because I was playing with a couple buddies, and there's no way in hell we should have had that show. We never should have opened for it was like our third show ever, and we were terrible. It was awful. We weren't any good, but they were like, yeah, you guys, they knew somebody. I don't know anybody, but they knew somebody. So they let us open up for him, and Jason saw me, and he sent me a message, and he was like, hey, I never do this, but would you want to come play in my band? I remember talking, she wasn't my wife at the time. I was talking to her, and we were like, I was like, am I getting poached right now? Like, I feel kind of fancy. I feel like a fancy lady right now. And sure enough, that band broke up like a week later. And so I called Jason. I was like, because he sent me some videos. And I was like, yes, what you're doing, that's what I want to do right now. And so, but I've never had big successful bands. It's always been local stuff. And occasionally I'll get thrown on a fun show. And then once I met Jason, I've got thrown on a lot of fun shows. And so that's why I don't know if I keep him around or he probably keeps me around. I don't know. It's one of those, but.
You know, Travis, we keep you around because I think you keep us all honest. I think you're the lighthearted soul of the band for sure.
I think, yeah. I'm naive and moronic. I don't know any better. I don't know. Yeah, I just don't know.
You're the most pure.
Well,
well, pure is like real.
Yeah, in a certain sense, yes. Yeah, yeah. Charlie, don't take that away from me.
Yeah, he's the unfiltered truth of the band, right? Yeah. And then how about you, Andrew? What about previous projects that you've been involved with?
Oh man, my story is not as lengthy as Travis's, but it's similar. You know, never played any highfalutin bands or opened for anybody super cool or anything like that. But you know, I started a lot later than these guys. I'm probably the youngest player in the band, but I was with a band for about 8 or 9 years, playing pretty regularly, some decent venues here in town, and. Then I started stalking Jason.
Nice. There's a hint of danger in this band. I like that.
But you're supposed to name drop the band, Andrew. So.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah. Okay. So my old band was the Texas Mod Crushers.
Oh, God. Which awesome.
It's very difficult to explain the name of this band, but it was, I don't know. It was what it was. Like it was just a bunch of guys that we all met because we were into vintage motorcycles, like 15 years ago, and British motorcycles, and there was like this Rockers Mods thing going on, and so they pulled that name because they saw this vintage picture of a British dude standing there next to his bike, and he had on a jacket and it said the Worthington Mod Crushers, and they were like, oh, that's perfect. Like, all right, man, we'll do that.
I mean, I gotta admit, I'm surprised by that, and it's not so much that I don't know, that's the whole mod thing to me doesn't seem like that would be like anywhere near Texas to me. And I mean, maybe that's just a bad stereotype, but I don't know. Like that's cool. I mean, I love the whole mod scene like thing. I'm a huge like Who fan, you know? So like that whole idea of like being in a mod band, I think is pretty rad, but like a scooter club basically. Right.
We were all riding British. We all had like some of both. I've got old British motorcycles and I've got an old Lambretta scooter. So I'm a bit of a mocker to rip off, a famous Beatle.
Nice. No, that's cool. I mean, so you recorded this record yourselves, right?
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
Yeah. And Charlie, like you basically kind of like worked the board for it, right?
Yep, absolutely. I've got my studio here at the house and we spent many, many hours. It's a blessing and a curse having that stuff at the house. Cause it doesn't cost a dime to record, but B, you have unlimited time to edit because it doesn't cost a dime. So it started to get, finally, we had to just set some deadlines and say, here it is, it's got to be done, or you'll just edit it and edit and edit and until you've edited it to pieces. So, but yeah, it was awesome. It was fun. Sounds awesome. The guy that recorded it did a great job.
Did he get paid in Doge?
Yeah, exactly. Paid in cryptocurrency and sweet love.
And beer. Well, and maybe some good Texas barbecue, right?
There we go.
Actually, one of the things I wanted to touch on was the quality of the recording, because I think, like, I was actually just listening to it today. I was revisiting it leading up to the podcast today. And I love how raw it sounds. Like, the guitar tones are not, like, they're clear and they're like crisp, but they're gritty and raw. And like, I think that that's like a testament to being able to really tap in to that sound that I think you guys are really going for. Cause, you know, and correct me if I'm wrong, but, and we'll touch on this maybe a little bit later, but you know, I get a lot of, you know, stuff like early Social Distortion, like the earlier Rancid vibes, like the Clash, like that kind of like working class kind of rock and roll, but with like that punk, yep, you know, kind of edge drawn to it. And that's kind of, I mean, those are like some of the more like notable bands that I think you could point to with that aesthetic, but like, that's what I hear when I listen to these songs. Like, I mean, like, what were some of the bands that like you kind of were drawing, you know, inspiration from, you know, when it came to like putting this band together?
Yeah, I don't think that we actually, let me stop and start over, because I know that when, we were doing the mastering of it and we were like, what do we want to compare it to? So I think I sent Charlie, I sent him a cover of the Bombshell Rocks City Rats and Alley Cats. And I was like, this is like sonically, like when we master it, this is, I think, like what we want to go for. So for me, Bombshell Rocks is always, once I found out about them in like 1998, I've always just like held them in high regards. Being a Swedish street punk band that I think very underrated in the scene for sure. But obviously The Clash is my first love, and I don't ever hide that. But I did, I think that we tried to, I don't know, soften up a lot of the way that I write for a little bit more melody. That I was concerned more with like melody, something that you can walk away humming, as opposed to like, oh, that was a nice shredded solo, or that was, you know, that was really heavy or brutal or, you know, just tough. I wanted more melody, and I think these guys helped bring that out for sure. Like, we have one, it's not, but like to us, track number 3 is like a pop punk song, and it's not really because of the way we play it, but in our heads, it's a total pop punk song. And then we have, what is it, Above It All? In my head, it's a Mighty Mighty Boston song. Doesn't sound like one whatsoever, but like there's like this running like horn section in my head when we play it and when I listen to it, that's not there. So don't expect Mighty Mighty Boston. So like, I think it's just like we each have kind of like this personal feeling for each song, and we drove like our influences into each one without really talking about them until like afterwards. I was like, oh yeah, that's what I was going for. That's what I was going for. So I don't know if that made sense.
Not sure. Really. I mean, I imagine that you guys like weren't necessarily like trying to, you know, hone in on a specific sound, you know, because I mean, you know, I think at a certain point, it's no longer about trying to write songs a certain way per se, but you just like, you just write what comes naturally to you, you know?
Absolutely.
But I only bring that up just because like, I thought that was, you know, a pretty great job at like kind of honing in on like this particular style of sound. And I don't know, I guess all I'm trying to say is like, I think that it's a really, really well recorded album, you know? And awesome. And I think that it's like mixed well and like everything. So Charlie, like kudos, you know, to everything that you did for that, but also kudos to the band.
Don't give him any praise. He doesn't deserve any of it. Stop that.
Yeah, you're going to make it hard to deal with him, man.
I take it all back, Charlie. Yeah, I take it all back. Yeah, it's garbage. I hate it. Yeah.
He's just a paint by numbers kind of guy. We provided all the numbers
all
and the colors.
It's all plugins anyway, you know. Yeah. He turned down the suck and put on like the good plug-in auto-tune the hell out of it, you know. Like actually, I imagine too that he probably just re-recorded it all like with other like you know players.
Oh, real musicians. Yeah, I brought in. Right.
Yeah. That's true. Spectrum. Yes.
No, that's cool. I mean, in you know, the Texas is like such a wild state, man. I mean, you know, so you guys are all from there and you guys have all lived there and experienced the music scene kind of like, you know, growing up and whatnot. You know, the first time that I ever went to Texas was back in like 2000 when my old band, you know, came through on tour and, you know, the band ended there. That was interesting.
At my house.
And I can talk about that, but, you know, had some great experiences there and, you know, being such a big state, it feels like, to me, like it would be so daunting to be a band from Texas because you drive like 5 hours, 6 hours in one direction, you're still in Texas, you know. In California, we kind of have that, you know, but you know, you talk about like bands from the East Coast and they're like, oh, I drive an hour, I'm like 3 states away.
Yeah.
You know? And I mean, I don't necessarily think that would really make a huge difference, but gosh, like having to always feel like you have to drive so far just to get out of the Texas environment, you know, like, is that like a thing? Like, what would you say about that?
It's you're planning weekends, but that's you're planning weekend trips in Texas. So you're in Houston and you want to go play Austin. So you might as well book Dallas or San Antonio too, you know, do Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then come home. I mean, that makes the most sense when you're talking about gas mileage and like exposure. But you know, sometimes you'd bite the bullet because it's an awesome show and you just drive 4 hours to play a show and then you drive back in the middle of the night and it's totally worth it because you're with your friends. But I will say, you know, you talked about like East Coast, West Coast, like in scenes, you know, like the East Coast, you have closer knit pockets of scenes. Years ago, Texas, there was a Houston scene, there was an Austin scene, there was a San Antonio scene, there was a Dallas scene. Over the years, that's bled out, right? It's a lot more less stigma to a certain town as a scene anymore. There's so many bands who live in different cities, major cities, and then get together and record and play shows. So it's a more globalization, I guess, of the punk scene in Texas, which seems difficult because of the size of it, but it's improved, like, for sure.
Yeah, to say to that too, as far as cities, as far as they are away from Texas or away from Houston, a drive to Austin, like, I'm in Austin right now. For work, I had to come to Austin. It's a 2.5 hour drive. And for some people, 2.5 hours, maybe. Oh, that's too long. I left at 4:30 this morning because I needed to be in Austin by 7. I was planning on making it a day trip. I do day trips to Dallas. So a 4 or 5 hour drive, it's a 3 hour drive. That's just it. It's now normal to me. It's familiar. It's not a big thing. So yeah, I was listening to the podcast you had with Mike the other day when he was like, "Oh yeah, you can drive an hour and you're two states away." Well, if you drive from Houston to El Paso, you're still only halfway to California. You're still halfway to LA. You drove across the state of Texas. 12
hours later, yeah.
Yeah, 12 hours later, you're still in Texas and you're only halfway to LA. So I think we've become accustomed to, okay, if you're going to take a 3 hour drive to get to another town, it's not a big deal. For me, it is growing up and it working, doing what I do. It's, if you have to go out of town for a day, yeah, 2 or 3 hour drive is not a big deal. And especially here, because you can take so many back roads and different things. You can add an extra 15 minutes to your drive and drive through four small towns you've never been through before, but now you're not on the highway. You're going through kind of back roads and stuff. It's what I did this morning. So it's just nice. There's a lot of room to kind of move around, but I don't think, especially here in Texas, long drives are as big of a, because we're just used to it. 2 or 3 hours for us is, you know, 30, 45 minutes for somebody else. Everything's just so spread out. We're kind of accustomed to it at this point.
Yeah. I mean, good that point. Makes a lot of sense. And oh, sorry, Jason, were you going to say something?
Well, I just said good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
Uh-oh.
No, I was going to say, I mean, it makes a lot of sense, you know, given that, especially now that, you know, the internet's been a thing now for the last, you know, 20 some odd years. And it was only starting to become a thing like back in like, you know, the early 2000s or whatnot. And to your point about like how you have like the El Paso scene, the Lubbock scene, like the, you know, Houston scene, the Dallas scene, the Austin scene. And they work maybe at that point still kind of islands, you know? And now because everyone's so connected, you know, it just kind of, like you said, bleeds into each other. And so it's less of a like, oh, the, you know, strictly Dallas or strictly El Paso or something like that. But yeah, I mean, I think that just by default, it kind of helps anyone who's from these isolated little pockets having to constantly, you know, go to these other cities that are so far away. Kind of makes you into more of a road dog, you know, and kind of makes you a little bit more prepared maybe for tour. I mean, would you say that that's pretty true?
Yes.
I think so. Yeah. I think so. For sure. Well, like for us from here, like Travis was saying, a 3 hour drive to get to a job is nothing. So once you've done that and grown up your whole life with these long ass drives, and then you're like, oh, 3 hours to go play a show in Austin, then another two to play in Dallas the next day is kind of nothing. It's a, yeah, for, and then it, when you do your first long, well, I like my band Next to Nothing, we always wanted to play peak of pop punk. We wanted to play in California. It was just for us coming from Texas, let's get to California. So we would leave on a fucking Friday night and drive 12 hours just to get to and play a show. Our first show would be in El Paso. just so we could maximize our time outside of Texas. If we're going out for like 2 weeks or 3 weeks, whatever, we would just get out of the state. We'd play a kickoff show at home and then just go just to get out of Texas and try to get some out of town exposure. But I mean, there's so many pretty cool places in Texas to play. Now a band could spend an entire week and have different crowds and play 4 or 5 days and never leave the state as well. So it is blessing and a curse, I guess. You can build your little state following by doing week-long runs in your own state and never get out.
Yeah. It's interesting thing too, though. Like, Jason's totally right, I think, about the like kind of homogenization or the unification of the punk scenes in all these towns. But it's still like Texas, I assume other places are like this, but you know, like, if it's the out of town band, you're a little bit more interested. It's like, oh, I want to catch those guys that are in town from Dallas. And we benefited, I think, a bit from that early on. We played several, I think our first 3 or 4 gigs were all outside of Houston. Like, it was well into like our, you know, first like getting to know you kind of like run that we finally played our hometown. But these other towns were just very receptive. And I think that's very cool. And I really like that about the Texas scene, that they're like so open to like, hey man, we're going to go down to our local, you know, because there's a band from this other town and we want to check them out. And I think that's really cool that it's supportive like that.
That's killer. And I mean, you know, Texas, I mean, like right now, you know, one of the, you know, big notable events that happens in Texas is obviously, you know, South by Southwest. And then there's a couple of other bigger, you know, festivals that have kind of happened over the years. Like, I know Fun Fest was happening. I can't remember, what was that in Austin as well?
Yeah, that was in Austin as well.
Yeah. And then I know that there was that punk, is it not Punk's Not Dead, but what was the one?
Remember the Punks in San Antonio.
Remember the Punks, yeah. And what city was that one in?
San Antonio,
okay. And the point that I'm trying to get at is that, you know, I mean, it's not that Texas hasn't had a punk scene, you know, for quite a long time, actually. Like, there's a lot of notable bands from Texas, you know, going as far back as like the early 80s. I mean, like, what is it? The Big Boys and like
the Dicks.
Dicks. Right. The Dicks. I mean, even, oh God, why can't I? Butthole Surfers are from Texas. And like, you know, they're like fucking legends, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, I mean, I definitely remember, you know, when I was first coming through Texas, I mean, it was huge there. You know, I mean, you could go to like Emo's, and like Emo's is like legendary, like Fitzgerald's or like any of these places. Let's like not forget, you know, shoot, you have like At the Drive-In coming from like El Paso, and then you have, you know, I mean, you have Steadfast coming from, you know, Houston. But who are some other kind of notable bands that you think kind of need some attention, you know, from Texas right now? Like, who were some bands that right now I think you would like to kind of give a shout out to?
Current bands? I really like the Palatines down in McAllen, Texas. They've done a couple tours. They've done, what is the Gainesville, the Fest? They've done that. They've done Midwest Punk. They've gone on the road with Copyrights. So they're killer down there. I don't think that they've done anything bad so far. Like, they just have it really together, and they're a 3-piece, and they sound amazing.
Huge. They're awesome.
Yep.
I'm actually going to be in McAllen all next week. I plan on hitting Jeff up just to bother him, just to see. I got to go to work for McAllen for a week. And, again, that's the Texas thing, right? I have to go to work to McAllen. McAllen's 5.5 hours away. I'm just driving down the street in Texas. But yeah, I might hit up Jeff just to bother him. Just say, hey, I'm in town. What's up, buddy? But yeah, the Palatines are great. They every time we play with them, or we went down, we did that San Antonio McAllen show. They're just super hospitable, and the town is really behind them too, which is, it's McAllen's kind of different town. It's down in what we call the Valley. But they have a really big local scene down there, and I feel like it's mostly cultivated by those guys. They're the ones who kind of cultivated and have grown that scene. It's really, really nice to see. When we went down there, people came out. It was a lot of support just for the local the local scene. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. It's memorable. Sniper 66.
Despero.
Despero, yeah.
Despero.
Nowhere Bound.
Nowhere Bound.
Yeah.
Our buddies.
He's been putting some goofy shit online now. He put that face mask thing on the other day. I don't know. He put that goofy thing. He had all that shit on his face. It's funny because it seems close, even though we're all so far away. And especially with last year, nobody was around, right? Like, we didn't know, none of the bands were around each other. And if you're not in the same city, then you're definitely not around the other bands. And so 2020 was weird for everyone. But it's like a day's not lost. If we were to see them tomorrow, it's like we saw them last week. We all catch up and pick up from where we left off. And we're all in good spirits. So it's always nice to see that I don't want to say the guys, is that's weird, but to see your buddies, you know? Yeah. So, but it's good. Yeah. To see everybody. I don't know. I'm a goofy bastard. So to see other people goofing off, I was like, oh, it doesn't have to be me. Cause I don't, I always make an ass of myself. It's nice when somebody else does it.
I'd be remiss to not mention one of my favorite bands from Texas, the Toadies.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Freaking love those guys. I think they have a new album that they've been working on too. So that'd be pretty rad. They put on a festival, I think now it's called, like, Dia de los Toadies or something like that, or
a whole festival just about their band. Wow.
Yeah. Well, I think it's like, I think it's like where they invite other bands to like play with them or something like that. I don't know.
We're going to have a whole festival and we're going to play our songs for 3 fucking days.
Hey man, why not? Toadies are great. I mean, Steadfast could, you know, you guys could do the Dia de los Steadfast, you know.
It'll be 40-minute long festival.
Right, 40-minute festival. But I thought everything was bigger in Texas.
I mean, we could play it. We could play it like Houston rap style and play it like in halftime and
yeah, DJ Screw. Yeah, we'll go DJ Screw. We'll do Steadfast, DJ Screw, and then we'll cover the Wealthy Beggars double album. We'll be good to go.
There it is.
Guest appearances by Beyonce and ZZ Top.
There you go.
Naturally, yeah.
Duh.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I wanted to actually ask you about, because this is something that just fascinates me. What is up with the humongous gas stations you have in Texas? Like,
those are regular sized gas stations. What's wrong with your gas stations?
We just have small ones. No, I mean, seriously, like, whenever I've gone through Texas and like I see these things, like the Beaver Mart or whatever it is,
Buc-ee's,
yeah,
cleanest like, bathroom Buc-ee's. In any gas station on earth.
It's a Walmart, dude. Like, it's the size.
That's exactly
of a Walmart.
What it is.
Like, yeah. A California-sized Walmart is the size of these gas stations. Like, you can get everything there.
Yeah,
it's incredible. Yeah.
Well, so here's the thing: if you've been driving for 4 to 5 hours, you've exhausted all your resources. You need a Walmart to stock up. And we just have them with a nice beaver on the cover. And,
you stop to get gas, use the restroom, get a Dr. Pepper, a brisket sandwich, and an airsoft rifle with your Yeti cooler, and you're back on the road.
Perfect. That's all you need.
And that is how you Texas. Yeah.
What else does Buc-ee's have that's ridiculous, right?
The jerky. Their jerky's delightful.
You can get a Texas flag bikini.
Oh, there you go. The bikini and the beach towels. Yeah.
Yeah. Andrew looks great in his.
he's not making that up. I look fantastic. Better now that I shaved my legs, but you know, it was pretty good to begin with.
Well, kind of moving back to the band, I guess. So with the pandemic kind of slowly but surely kind of coming to a slower pace, you know, like, I mean, hopefully we're going to kind of get back to somewhat normal. At this time, even though you guys are spread out, like, are you planning to kind of get anything rolling for the band relatively soon?
Immediately, I've got about 15 songs to track drums for that Jason sent me about 6 months ago. So that's on the radar for starting this weekend. I'll start miking up the drums and laying down drum tracks for the next record. So that's definitely coming. And I'm pretty sure, I think we've started a little bit talking about this, but probably towards the end of the year, maybe first next year, trying to do a run and go actually go out and do a couple weeks support of the record that's collecting dust in my closet right now. So we'll go out and sling some records and play some shows. So we're definitely, I mean, even though we're spread out, there's no plans on slowing down. It's just going to be a little different dynamic writing and recording across state lines. And now we have an excuse to fly up to the Northwest and borrow gear and play some shows in some other regions that would have been a little more out of our reach, I think. So I think it could be beneficial in the long run.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're all still working on getting vaccinated and making sure travel is safe. My recent move it's recent. So, you know, I still am getting settled in up here. Don't tell the other guys, but I haven't touched the guitar since, I don't know, November, maybe. I just moved up here in January. So, good start, for myself. Right. It's all work related. So that's the cool thing. And then when it's time to play shows, it's just going to be more purposeful. Like Charlie said, it's, more trips, hitting more cities for sure, rather than just, hey, it's Thursday, Friday night, let's play a show here. Just more planned, more purposeful.
Yeah, it's kind of always what we did was, it was never, let's play three nights in Houston in April. We'd pick a weekend or 4 or 5 days a month and we'd go, hey, now we're going to do San Antonio, we're going to do McAllen, and we're going to do some Corpus, or we're going to go, hey, we're going to Colorado this weekend. We're going to do a couple shows around Denver and come back. It was all kind of, instead of just flooding your hometown with, because there's tons of bands used before the pandemic, flooding your hometown with, hey, come see us. We're playing six nights a week in Houston, 3 weeks out of the month. It's like, nobody wants to see you, dude. Stop. So we picked all of our shows to where we wanted to go play, where we had friends, where we had, you know, contacts, hey, we come play with you guys. And we did that. And it was a blast for the 2 years that we did it. We played a couple times a month, places where we wanted to play, and we take trips and we do that. So once things start opening up again, I think it's just gonna, that may be the way that things go, instead of people doing, well, the way things go for a while, right? But it seems way more fun if you get to see the band that you've been looking for, not talking about us, but we're just going to be accompanying that band. We're going to be accompanying that band. We'll be behind them. The band that you want to go see, they're like, oh, we're doing a week straight or 2 weeks straight of this small tour. And they do that three times a year. Then you get a couple of chances to go see that band. We'll be the guys on the back and be like, hey, how's it going? We're here too. So I think it'll be a different kind of a landscape of the way that touring goes, and it might be fun for a lot of people. I don't know. We'll find out.
That's great that you guys are like being, you know, cautiously optimistic. I think that's pretty much what everyone's feeling at this point. I mean, I know there's you know, a band that I work with my record label that's playing a show this weekend, which will, I guess, when this airs, be a few weekends prior. But I mean, I think at a certain point, we just kind of have to dip our toe in the pool and like see how it goes, you know? And, you know, there are some people that are still, you know, of the mind, it's like, nope, it's too early. Like, we shouldn't be touching it at all across the board. And I can certainly appreciate that. I mean, I know that I am not ready to necessarily jump headfirst into harm and like start playing a bunch of indoor gigs. Like once I'm vaxxed, I think I'm prepared to play like some outdoor shows, you know, as long as everyone's being like relatively safe and sane. But I don't know. We'll just kind of see how it goes. And hopefully we are able to kind of inch our way back to somewhat normal, you know? And I'm really hoping you guys can kind of get on that because yeah, man, I mean, it's gotta be such a drag, like knowing that like you had this record and like you just had to sit on it basically for a while, but it's a good record and I hope people can, you know, start appreciating it more and, you know, bully for you guys for trying to get on top and getting a new record out ASAP. So that's great. I want to kind of shift gears here. There's a couple of questions that I'd like to throw out to every guest that I have. The first one being, who are some bands? I know that we already talked about some Texas bands, but are there any other bands, like either past or present, that you really think need to be on people's radar right now?
I'll say one band that I can't stop listening to is the freaking Hammer Bombs. I know that record's 2 years old now, but that record, I listen to it at least two or three times a week. It's in my like damn near daily rotation. So that's one that, and I know they're on a lot of people's radars and they made it on a lot of people's top of 2019 lists for that record, for that last album. But that album's so fucking good. It's so catchy. So if nobody's checked them out, that's a band definitely to put on your radar. Anybody else? Jason.
Yeah, man, I don't know. I've been listening to a lot of different things. I've been listening to like some old school hip hop and some synth pop and chill wave and just straight punk rock, man. I don't know. I find myself always going back to the Dear Landlord album.
Dream Homes. That's tricky. It's a great song. Those guys.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to say. What do you want to say? Those guys.
I think talking about, like, I did say Bombshell Rocks, I think, is underrated and they should be on people's radar more. I think the Copyrights are underrated and I think that they should be on the radar more. There's so many good bands. I don't know if you know, I can't remember if they're from Germany or not. Front Kick is a good one. And these are old, like, you know, 15, 20-year-old bands, I guess. Radio Dead Ones. I was really big into like the European street punk scene for a while, so they stay on my playlist. 59 Times the Pain, they put out their, before they broke up, they were more of like a hardcore band, but their last album that they put out, Calling the Public, man, it's such a great like Clash tribute type album. Like it's very different from the rest of their stuff, but it's an amazing album. Man, what else am I always listening to? I listen to a lot of Billy Bragg. I don't know if that's punk enough anymore.
No, I mean, it certainly doesn't have to be punk rock. I mean, you know, this podcast is not exclusive for punk rockers. You know,
I don't know. Let me pull up my playlists while you guys are jumping in with y'all's, and I'll throw out some more bands.
So one of the things that I've been listening a lot to is and it's the new like pop punk's not dead explosion. I don't know if it's the So Machine Gun Kelly put out a pop punk album. He didn't really.
All right, Mute Travis. Did. Mute Travis.
No, wait, I said he didn't really. So I'm saying he didn't really. But there's this new wave of pop punk that's kind of, I'm not going to say, I'm sorry I said his name. I'm not trying to say any names of the kids who are trying to do it. And I say kids, that makes me feel 1,000 years old. I'm the youngest person in this band. I feel 1,000 years old saying shit like that. But there are a bunch of like new artists doing pop punk kind of stuff now that's really, I don't know, it's fun. It may not be pop, it may not be pop punk, but it's fun.
Okay, I got one. I got one for you, Travis. Okay. Direct Hit.
Direct Hit.
Yeah, direct hits.
Direct
right?
hit. I don't know about tits. What direct hit?
they were on that bill when Face to Face came with in Less Than Jake, and they brought direct hit and Jukebox Romantics. Direct hit was very impressive.
Well, that's the one I would love to. One of my favorite bands of all times.
Yes,
and it's the playoffs, or it's soon to be the playoffs. But I always wear Jukebox Romantics clothing in all of our videos and all my shows. One of my favorite bands of all times. Hi, Mike. Congratulations on your pregnancy. Good job, buddy.
He looks good for being pregnant. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's looks carrying the weight well.
I like how he said, like, we're pregnant. Who are you? Okay. I'm glad you're with it too. Yeah. No.
How about you, Andrew?
Oh, man. So something that Jason talked us into, which I think is a fantastic idea, was to like put together a Spotify playlist just of shit that we're into. So that if anybody's into us, they can be like, oh, why is this guy thinking the way he's thinking? And part of what I do is I try to listen to all kinds of weird stuff on purpose to drag these outside influences into what we're doing. Because, you know, when I'm writing a bass part or whatever, you know, something will pop into my head and I don't know where it's from, but it's from something that I heard, you know, like just happens. If you hear it, it's rolling around in your head and it's going to come out sooner or later. And I think that if you do that, it can make your playing more interesting, you know, which I need all the help I can get. So I'm trying to get all that coolness, but I just put out a playlist, as Jason suggested, that's got like a list of a bunch of weird stuff that I listen to. And it's like, you know, I've got an MC Honky song on there, which you may have never even heard of that band.
That song plays. I had never heard that. And the other day I listened to that shit. I was like, whoa, that's fucking crazy.
It's nice, right? But weird. Nice. I mean, it's like, it doesn't sound anything like us and it's not supposed to, but it has a bass line in there that's like in my head and I might steal a little piece of that. Don't tell them. And then, you know, I've got some other stuff in there that of course you would expect from a bass player. Like I've got some Morphine on there, you know, and some other, you know, fantastic bass players, but I also have like Big Black, which was a Texas band from the 80s that was all, you know, weird and stuff. And then I've got Holiday in Cambodia in there, beautiful bass line opening that, and just a bunch of like weird shit put together. But you know, like there's a, and I do that on purpose, and I have all kinds of weird stuff that I listen to on a regular basis. But I have to say, there's one weird band that I always go back to. It's not weird, but, and Jason knows probably exactly what I'm gonna say. So there was this band, and it's probably because I worship Paul Simon, and he was in this band called Havana 3 AM, and I don't know why I can't let that CD go, but like it'll collect dust on my shelf for a couple of years and I'll always reach back and pull it out and go like, oh man, I need to listen to this again. But
it's a fantastic album.
Somewhere in there I answered your question.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Thanks for kind of listing off a bunch of those bands. I'll try to add like links to some of those if I can find, or if you guys want to like collectively send them as an email, that'd be great. Yeah, moving on to really like my last question that I like to ask every guest on here is, you know, if you had to narrow down your record collection to only five records to listen to for the rest of your life, what would they be? And since there's four of you, like maybe let's just keep it to like one each, something like that.
If I had to pick one, it's going to be Milo Goes to College. That's. And then second runner up would be anything from the Taylor Swift discography.
Charlie Price, ladies and gentlemen. Charlie Price. How about you,
it's
Andrew?
Not wrong.
Man, tonight I would pick John Lee Hooker, Never Get Out of These Blues Alive.
How about you, Travis?
It's very convenient because I have, you asked this earlier, right? You said desert island thing. So if I'm on a desert island, I'm dead in a couple of days because of my diabetes that I got when I was 8. I only have one album I want to listen to.
I got dark I real quick.
I'm going to die. I'm going to be dead in a day or two. So I want to listen to the Mark, Tom, and Travis show. I want to listen to pop punk. One of my favorite live albums of all time. I could easily listen to that until I just desperately die away on a beach
in a diabetic coma.
Yeah, in a horrific diabetic coma. I'll listen to the Mark, Tom, and Travis show. It'll be great. I'll hear about penises and the devil. So Mark, Tom, and Travis show. Because it's one of my favorite live albums of all time.
Jason?
Top one would be the Clash self-titled, the U.S. release, the one with White Man and Hammersmith Palette. But then, like, I'll break the rule and I'll do my five. So Streets of San Francisco, Swingin' Utters. Let's Face It, Mighty Mighty Boss Stones. Kaya, Bob Marley. I think that's a fantastic album. And right now, I would say Darklands, Jesus and Mary Chain. I want that on vinyl, but it's like 60 to 80 bucks anywhere online that I find it. So if anybody has that album and they want to sell it cheap, I would like a copy of Darklands.
We'll throw it out there to the internet and see what they have to say. No, that's, I mean, those are really great picks. I mean, that's a dynamic group of albums. So thank you guys. And yeah, it's been a pleasure having you guys on the show. You know, everyone, please check out Steadfast HTX. Their album Transmitters is available. You can pick it up online via Bandcamp. You guys have a website too, and we'll add a link to that as well. But you know, you guys, I wish you guys the best of luck with recording this next record, and hopefully we'll be able to maybe get you online on the show when that comes down on the road. But
awesome.
Pleasure to have you on the show. We'll talk to you guys real soon.
All right.
Thanks, Andy.